There is an endless sea of podcasts about entrepreneurship. Talking about it, but not living it. We live it every day. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel, talking about real estate investing, but also encompassing general subjects in regards to owning small to medium-sized businesses, and of course, all the struggles that business owners must overcome to be successful. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, and this is Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your hosts, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Today, we have a special guest in the house, our good friend, Steve Rosenberg. Hey, Steve.
Hey, guys.
Yeah, it's awesome. We never have guests
in the podcast.
It's kind of
exciting. Actually three-dimensional today, right?
We're not looking at a TV screen, so it's awesome.
And Steve is an international commercial airline pilot who, after the tragedies of 9/11, was forced to realize that his safe and secure career was nowhere near as safe and secure as he had thought. Steve chose real estate investing to be able to control his own destiny and create his own generational wealth. Steve created the fastest growing property management company in the state of Texas.
I don't know about that.
Here in Houston,
on.
Actually our biggest competitors. It's kind of funny that we're now friends. Yeah. He managed over 1,000 properties across three major metropolitan cities. Steve built the business up and created maximum cash flow, positioning his company for a very profitable exit. I'd love to hear more about that, and I think our listeners would as well. Along with growing his property management company, Rosenberg has flipped, owned, and wholesaled hundreds of single-family homes and apartment complexes across the U.S. Parlaying all the success from real estate investing and property management growth, Steve has gone on to be one of the most well-known influencers in the real estate community. He is a top contributor to Bigger Pockets as well as other top-level real estate platforms. He has been a guest and has collaborated on countless panels, webinars, masterminds, conferences, podcasts, as well as being a published author of your book called
Failing Our Way to Millions.
Yes. Well, Steve, thank you so much for joining us here today. I would love for our guests to get a little bit more background and how you got started in the real estate industry.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. Like probably many people, real estate wasn't my first choice. You know, real estate was, I had a regular career as a pilot, as you read. And, you know, I kind of got thrust into it by something that happened. The 9/11 tragedies caused me to have to get involved in real estate because, frankly, the safe, secure job that I thought I had, I realized was not safe and secure because I got delivered a furlough notice 2 days after 9/11. And they said, basically, thanks for being an employee. All that stuff you thought was real is not.
Right.
And you're going to be on the street with 50,000 other airline pilots. So good luck.
Wow.
And so you realize it's very humbling. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you that when you've learned something your whole life and that's all you ever want to do. And next thing you know, you realize is that it's gone. And it wasn't like in the oil industry, like here in Houston, you know, you can see a trend, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, oil's changing. We may have to get out and do something else. This was 48 hours after the 9/11 tragedy. So you're still in shock.
Yeah.
And now you're saying, I'm not even going to have a job. And this really had nothing to do with me. Like, this is a byproduct of everything else.
Right.
But now I am affected.
Yeah.
And, you know, luckily, I never actually lost my job. I came within 30 numbers from the bottom of a 6,000 pilot seniority list.
Oh, wow.
And not that I'm going to say that's better or worse, but I will say that for the next 2 years, you keep looking over your shoulder, waiting for the envelope to show up. Then they say, we're doing more cuts.
Wow.
And so you realize that you're a very small cog in a very, very big wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And you have no control over your destiny. If they decide that they're, you know, with a swipe of a pen, you could be gone. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I look to see what else is there? Like, what do people do that are wealthy that can control what they want to do? And every road kept leading to real estate.
Right.
And so not knowing anything about real estate, I was an airline pilot. That's all I ever wanted to do. I thought, okay, well, let me look into this. Let me figure this out. And so I started, you know, like a lot of people, read like a book a week, and I learned everything I could and just trying to really consume this new society called real estate. And ended up getting a mentor who showed me how to basically flip properties or option properties with double closings and stuff like that. And that was my first entrance into real estate. I didn't really have the money. And honestly, I was a little bit afraid to buy a house because I didn't know if I was going to be out of a job next week.
Yeah.
So I was afraid to do that. And that was probably the fear in me doing that. But I think it was well-founded. Mm-hmm. But the reality was, is I was doing very good at flipping, at wholesaling these properties.
Yeah.
So I learned about using option contracts and all that. And I started getting very, very good at it. And then I started learning how to be a better communicator. And I started taking classes and courses on NLP and negotiations and stuff. And the next thing you know, I had enough money that I could actually go into an apartment complex from the flipping. Nice. And yeah, so my first deal was an apartment mm-hmm. complex. Then I purchased a couple houses, you know, in the interim. And me and my business partner, at the time we were just partners in the complex. We subsequently became business partners. We thought, we exited one of the apartment complexes, sold it, did very well. This is about 2008, 2009. Mm-hmm. He wanted to learn what I was doing, which was wholesaling. I wanted to learn what he was doing, which was owning apartments. It's always the grass is greener, right? Right.
Yeah.
And so we basically traded. And he said, I'll teach you. You mm-hmm. teach me. So I started showing him what we were doing. We saw that the economy was changing. So instead of us wholesaling properties to other investors, we just thought, let's just keep them.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're getting prices, properties right. at good deals. And the one thing I will never forget, and I will never let him live this down, is he says to me one day, he says, hey, I got this great idea. He says, I found these houses that there's tons of them out here in Houston, and we can get as many as we want. And I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah, and they're super cheap. I'm like, what are they? He's like, they're called low-income properties. And I'm like, really? I'm like, I don't understand. Like, why does nobody want them? He's like, I don't know, but there's a ton of them. And they're we can get them for they're cheap, like 30, 40,000.
Sounds like Detroit. Like,
and I'm like, so me, I'm like, well, why just buy one? Let's buy as many as we can.
Oh, shoot.
So about a year later, a year and a half later, we have about 20 of these things. Yeah. And now we realize why people don't own these properties. We didn't know how to do maintenance. We didn't know anything. Yeah. We were just buying properties. And all of a sudden, these people started calling us. I need a maintenance. I need this. Can't pay my rent. And these people are called tenants. And all of a sudden, it's like, it just never stopped. And I'm like, is this, like, I remember the beginning. Like, it's the beginning of a tsunami. And I'm like, is this normal? Like, I don't, why are they calling us? Like, this is supposed to be passive. I don't get it. And he's kind of like, I don't know. Like, I'm not really sure. It didn't happen this way in the apartment complex. Well, in the apartment complex, we had an apartment manager.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't have that here. So we're trying to figure this out. We can't, the tenants are leaving and they're taking parting gifts with them, like wiring, appliances. One guy took some plants from the front yard, you know. And so I'm like thinking, am I on TV? Is this real? So the one thing for the people, you know, watching and listening, the one mistake that we made right here was that we had this tunnel vision and we thought that we could fix the problem. I thought if I just do more, I can fix it. So like any genius, we go and buy another like 20 more.
Yeah.
And it was like gasoline.
Don't question the strategy. Yeah. Just buy more.
I know what to do. This isn't working. Let's do more of it. So we buy all these properties. It got so bad that my wife finally said, the next property you buy better be nice because you will be living in it. Because you suck at buying houses. You're no good at it. Stop. And that was kind of when we realized, okay, like, an addict, like, okay, we have a problem. Like we are not good at doing this.
Yeah.
So then we didn't know what to do with the properties. So we tried to hand them off to some management companies. And as
nobody
we all know, nobody wanted them. And they were like, no, we don't want these. And so now we're sitting with, I don't know, 30, 40 properties. And we started basically said, okay, we can't sell them. It's 2010.
Yeah.
And you know, nobody was really getting loans back then. And so what we ended up doing was, is we plumbed the infrastructure of what we thought a property management company, we didn't even know property mm-hmm. management, what we would do to survive. That was all we wanted to do was survive. Like, let's create some systems. You do your thing. I do my thing. Let's just run this and figure this out. And after about 6 months, they stabilized. They never actually made us money, but they stabilized and they stopped mm-hmm. kind of bleeding us to death. And then what happened was, is, you know, other investors, you know, and we're in all these investing groups. They, you know, found out what we were doing. And then they were like, hey, could you manage our properties? And we were like, hell no, we don't want your problems.
Like,
we
barely fixed ours. My problems.
We barely fixed ours. You think we want your problems? Like, and so, but then we realized, well, maybe there's something here. Maybe there's a play here on this. And so the first thing we did is we went to a business coach and we told him what we did, what are all of our mistakes, and we told him what we are looking at. And he says, well, you have opportunity, you've got marketability, and you've got scalability with this model. Mm-hmm. There is a business here. You two guys are not the smartest guys in the world, and you will be out of business in 6 months if you keep going down this path. So we hire him on the spot as our business coach now. So now we have a business coach. And then that was the inception of the property management company that we created. And so for the next
seven. So you didn't study no other management company or the business coach really is.
We just dove right in.
We just dove right in. Yeah. We didn't know anything. We were like, wow, these property management companies, like you charge a fee. And, you know, we learned it all. We had no idea. I remember going to our first NARPM event. And I mean, I think we had like 80, 90 doors. And I remember seeing these guys with 300, 400, 500 properties. And you're just like, oh my gosh, like these guys, how do they do that? And then, you know, just like, and I just remember like thinking to myself, like our business coach used to always just tell us like, this is a business like any other business. Mm-hmm. Change the chassis out, whether it's United Airlines, Ford Motor Company, property management, they all run the same. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, we created Empire Industries and we grew that company. Mm-hmm. And the difference was, I think, is that we were coming at it from a business owner standpoint, not a property manager. So as you guys know, a lot of people in the property management business, they grow it because they're a property manager or they're a realtor or an investor. They become a property manager and then that identifies with them. And so our mindset was, this could be dog food. This could be hair salon. Well, not hair stuff, but it could be something else. But it doesn't really matter to us. It's just a business model. Yeah. And so we could take those policies of what we did and apply them anywhere.
Yeah.
And so that's how we came at it.
That's cool. And did you lose your hair when you?
I did.
We were not going to go there.
I had long flowing locks when this started, dreadlocks. Yes. A lot of, as you guys know, property management business. Pete, my business partner, he used to always joke and say, you know, we're like the trash men of real estate. Nobody wants us, but they need us.
Would you do it all over again? The same route?
Boy, that's a good question. You know, I think, would I do it all over again? Man, I think I would. I think I would probably enjoy the ride more.
Yeah.
Enjoy the journey. You know, I was always, you know, when you're on the precipice of losing everything, like with flying, mm-hmm. it's like your back's up against mm-hmm. the wall, so you're always fighting to make sure you don't go up against that wall again. So I was always operating out of like, how do I get as far away from this wall as I can? So I was never really enjoying it. To me, it was just, what's the next thing to tackle? And, you know, we ended up exiting and selling the business, and that was never really the plan. We were just going to keep on growing. And then, you know, motivation ends up kind of wearing you down, right? Mm-hmm. Motivation is like a battery. It drains over time. And, you know, I was very motivated to grow as much as I could. And then after a while, you get to a point of saying, you know, not so sure that this is what I want to do, because I still am an airline pilot. I was still flying full time.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, we all have 24 hours in a day. So I had to start making some choices of where my time was being spent. And that, it does get wearing. It wears on you a little bit.
So you ended up building that property management to a very successful level, and then you guys exited, right?
And you built it pretty quick too. Yeah. I mean, it was like,
we did, fast. And what was funny is the one thing that we learned, and for people watching this, doesn't matter what you're doing, is the lessons, I would say, that one of the biggest lessons when you have a partnership is we're very big in staying in our lanes. Mm-hmm. He did what he did well, I did what I did well, and we respected that all the time. And it was never personal. It was always the business came first. So, you know, whether people needed to get paid, people got paid first. Whether people, you know, we always kept our word with everybody. Mm-hmm. And I never questioned, well, you know, you have these conversations or arguments where you're backdoor questioning, you know, you're having those conversations, but I never questioned his intent and he never questioned mine. And I always knew that he was doing everything he could and I was doing everything I could. Yeah. So that was one of the most important things I would do.
Well, you did actually build an amazing culture. We've probably run into three or four employees that say,
I mean, we have one.
Yeah.
That's working for us now that can't speak enough about the culture and what they built there. So,
We're very much leaders eat last mentality. Yeah. We're very much, you know, we always thought, you know, we stayed with the company and grown it, you know, I mean, we probably would have bought you guys. I'm not really sure.
But, whatever. Best friends, whatever. Yeah. still.
Yeah. But, you know, you learn that, you know, everybody has triggers of what's important to them, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody has something. Just because we were the owners of the company and we had a business, that's not necessarily important to someone who's working there.
Right.
So you really got to find out what's important to them and be that leader and almost like a mentor to them to really give them what do they want out of life. You know, we're talking about buying businesses and doing this. They may just need to pay the rent.
Right.
That's what's important to them. And so we learned how to really, and a lot of this was being coached and mentored that we learned how to communicate with people. But yeah, to grow the business, I mean, we learned that, you know, a lot of times we come into a business model or something with a preconceived mindset. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, I've done a lot of studying and learning a lot and like little things like spending money on marketing versus the term investing in marketing. Mm-hmm. But that little word is a huge difference in how you think about something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then it starts asking more questions as to where you're spending your time, energy, and effort. And we were taught very early on, and honestly, the first person, I think first or second person we hired, one who's working here for you now, is our marketing guy. Mm-hmm. Because as you know, entrepreneurs, operators, we think we need to build it. And if we build it, they will come. Mm-hmm. Well, if you build it, nobody knows about it because your phone's not ringing, you know? So our thing was make the phone ring first. We'll build it as they're coming.
Right.
So, I think so many people miss that. Any business.
Mm-hmm. Any business matter. 101. I would 100%. And a lot of people, you know, a lot of people create their own business because they don't like who they work for and they think they can do it better.
Right.
But that's, you know, if I was a hamburger maker and I made the best hamburgers in the world and I put my business next to McDonald's, I'm still going out of business. I'm not going to outbeat. Why? Because they're better marketing and they're better at sales. Mm-hmm. And that's the reality of it.
Yeah. On the partnership, you know, I have a partnership with my wife, but it's a little different, but the,
same thing.
Yeah. But we've never seen, you know, you hear so many tragedies of partnerships and we've always really steered against them, you know, but I'm curious, was it that you guys are very different and very different.
Very different.
But you guys made it work. So you touched on it, but tell me how did you guys make it work? And maybe did you exit at a time where maybe it could have ended bad, but you exited at a good time? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question. And you know, partnerships are tough, right? Mm-hmm. The majority of them, as we know, do not last. And one of the things I'll say, you know, initially is if anyone's going into a partnership, you know, you don't do it to what it is today. You do it to where the partnership's going to blossom and become. It's kind of the saying, you know, you skate to where the puck's going to be, not where it's at. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, you know, they want to get into a partnership because two people don't know anything. And they think if two people don't know anything, at least they'll lose half as much. That's like two losers, you know, it makes no sense, right? So, yeah, I don't agree with that model. But I think what you have to do is you really have to understand when you're in a partnership that's, you know, we became partners because we wanted to buy real estate. And just by luck, we were complete opposites and didn't know it. And, you know, that's very rare, you know. But I would say that you could emulate what we did in the sense of whether it's a disc profiling or whatever it is that you got to look. You really have to do some self introspective and say, okay, what is my strength? But more importantly, what are my weaknesses? Right. And what am I not good at?
Yeah.
And the same thing for the other person. Mm-hmm. And you have to look and say, okay, you know, does this make sense? Mm-hmm. Are you the yin to my yang kind of thing? And more importantly, the one thing I'll say is about partnerships is you have to talk, you know, I always tell people you have to have the, what if we get divorced conversation in the partnership? What do we do if, you know, I'll give you a quick example. Someone that I was coaching one time, he had a situation and the partner they had a cash call on a deal. And the partner said, oh, I can't come up with the money. Mm-hmm. And so he's asking me what he should do. And I said, well, did you ever have this conversation? He said, no, we didn't, you know. And I said, well, you know, you got to figure it out. Either you divest his interest, you put a marker on it or a lien on the property for that, or you got to do something to at least get paid back. Mm-hmm. So that was the first ripple of a rift, right? Mm-hmm. Well, 3 weeks later, that partner shows up in a brand new car. Mm. And the guy's kind of beside himself. And he's like, I thought you didn't say you had any money. He said, I didn't say I didn't have money. I said, I can't put money into this because my wife doesn't want me putting any more money into the deals anymore. So the one thing I will say is when you're thinking about a partnership is you've got to, this is my suggestion for people out there. First of all, you've got to have an alignment meeting with all partners and spouses. And you've got to talk about, this is best case scenario, this is worst case scenario, this is about where I think we'll be. And mm-hmm. when we were coached by the business coach once a year, we went in and did an alignment. And we would, he would basically, this is where the business is going, this is their goals, this is the expected time commitment, this is how much revenue, this is mm-hmm. this is the roadmap. Does anybody have a problem with it? Let's get it out now.
Yeah.
And the other thing we did is we made a board of directors with basically us and our wives. Later on, we ended up bringing another partner in, but we had a board of directors, and every, I believe it was every quarter, we would do a board of directors meeting mm-hmm. where we'd bring out the P&L statement, we'd bring out the ledger, bring out everything. And basically we would explain as like a board of directors meeting of where we're at. Are we on track or off track? If we're off track, why? Spouses could ask information. They didn't really want to be in the business, but it's good that they know.
Right.
What do you do all day? Where are you at? You know? And so that was how we kept the relationship on track. But like any business relationship, like anything, it's going to have challenges. We mm-hmm. had challenges. And to answer your question, you know, we were definitely diverging in our business. I was going off into a different path. He was kind of wanting to stay where he was because mm-hmm. he was kind of comfortable with that, which I, you know, we were very good friends and we talked it through, and, you know, he was willing to just let me basically be a silent partner in the business. And that was a potential option for me. Mm-hmm. To me, it happened to work out that somebody came and wanted to purchase mm-hmm. us. I don't think if you were to ask us both, I don't think he would have wanted to have purchased or sold as much as mm-hmm. I did.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. I was going to something. He was the operations. He was the integrator. So he was building something. So it's hard when you build something and no longer, it's not yours anymore, mm-hmm. you know? And again, he was doing that full time. I still was an airline pilot and mm-hmm. I was looking to go off and do speaking and educating and mentoring and stuff. So he and I were kind of going on different paths, but what he wanted the business to do is he didn't want it to grow at the speed that I wanted it to grow mm-hmm. at. So we were definitely diverging for sure. And I don't think I ever would have gotten to a point that I left the business or anything, mm-hmm. but I probably would have been more silent in the business and let him run it at the speed that he wanted to.
Right.
It would be my guess.
Yeah. Very cool. A lot of insight, and I appreciate that, because I think what you shared on partnership, I think is key, and I've never heard it done that well or explained that well. So I think that was awesome. And bringing the spouses in and the board of directors, I think that's
key. And you know, as you guys know, you get people that want to buy real estate, right? Mm-hmm. And they'll come in and say, oh, me and my childhood buddy are going to buy something. And I say, okay, have you talked about the divorce? Oh, we're not going to, that'll never happen.
Because we've known each other for 20 years.
I tell them, that's exactly. Yeah,
you drink beers together.
Yeah, we drink every Friday. It should be fine. And so I tell people, I'm like, that's exactly why you have to have this conversation. Yeah. It'll save your friendship.
Yeah.
Because if you can't have that conversation in a cool, calm manner, like right now, what are you going to do when you got to have a $20,000 cash call and there's heat of battle and there's mm-hmm. a time constriction and he's like, I don't have it. We never talked about this. And now there's anger and animosity, and now the friendship's gone, but you still own the asset together.
Yeah.
So I'm like, if you can't have the conversation now when it's calm, don't try it when everyone's pissed off, you know?
What about, I thought that was something that's really unique about your story, and that keeps coming up. You kept your airline pilot job the whole time.
I did.
Explain that. Like, what's the thought behind it? Do you, and I'll ask a second question on it.
Yeah. Later, you know, I love being a pilot. I just love it. It's one of those things as a little kid looking up at the sky and seeing these planes thinking, man, I want to do that one day.
Yeah.
So when you get to a point that you're at flying, you know, I fly a 787, so I fly all international routes and I love it. I love traveling. I think a lot of people have this preconceived notion that once you hit a certain benchmark in finances or you get a certain level of wealth that you need to quit your job. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't know that's you know, something a lot of people, they do that because they hate their job. Mm-hmm. Not because, you know, I don't hate my job. I love what I do. Now, I go to the airport. I get in the plane. I launch. I go to another part of the world. I hang out. I come home and I'm done. Mm-hmm. So my job is not like a 9-to-5 job. Mm-hmm. I fly 3 to maybe 4 times a month, maybe.
Right.
I was doing Australia for a long time. So to me, it's you know, I do a lot of, when I was in Australia, I actually worked in real estate while I was on my layover. So, I mean, I took advantage mm-hmm. of it, but... So that's a little bit unique, but I just don't think that everybody needs to have this preconceived notion that once my bank account gets to a certain level, once my door count gets, whatever the net worth, whatever your barometer is, I don't necessarily think that if you love doing something,
you have to quit.
Why quit?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's kind of, now I will say that I don't really get wrapped around the axle with stuff. So like any job that you go to or anything, you know, there's drama, right? Mm-hmm. Even in the airline industry, a lot of drama. But what I've realized is that when I go to the plane, the other guys that don't have anything else, they'll talk about what's going on with the contract and union and this and that. And I'm like, I don't care. Yeah, I'm like, I don't even get the emails from the union. So, but my point is real estate has given me that ability.
My EA gets those.
Yeah, I got an assistant. She'll let me know if it's important. But the one thing I'll say is real estate has given me that freedom to do what I want and not have to worry about it. So a lot of people ask me, you know, we've got COVID and all this stuff going on here and the airlines did a bunch of furloughs and stuff. And so people would ask me, they'd say, hey, Steve, what's the difference between you and 9/11 and you today? Because you still work for the same company. Now, obviously, I've got seniority and I'm not in danger of losing my job or anything. But I tell them the difference is 20 years of grinding it out and hard work. And I'm now in a different financial, mental position that I don't need the job. Yeah. Like if they said tomorrow, hey, Steve, you got to go. I'd be like, okay, well, it sucks, but okay. Like I'm fine. Like I've got my real estate. I've got my other stuff. Yeah. It'd be okay. Other people would just like, you know, you make more money, you spend more money. So other people would be clinging to that job, doing everything they could. Just like I was in shock after 9/11. I fly with people that I flew with back in 9/11 and they're still petrified that something will happen. So they kind of work and live in fear instead of just taking action and changing your environment and changing the outcome.
Yeah.
I know we're going to get into what you're doing today, but I know you coach and mentor a lot of people and put a lot of education out there. Do you recommend that? So if they're recommend it's either starting a business or getting into real estate, do you recommend them keeping their job for a certain period of time until you get them, you know?
If you are miserable at your job, then I would say get a new job.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like if you go to work and that is changing your dynamic of who you are and you are just, you know, we all know there's people that go to work and they're just miserable. I mean, look at the freeway every day, right? There's people that just hate going to work. If that is you, then I would say do something that makes you happy.
Yeah.
Money is not going to make you happy, right? We all know that's not going to do it. So I don't know that I would tell people to quit their job. I would say do something that you love to do. And you know, you do something to build your business, right? And to build your wealth. Mm-hmm. But then do something that you like to do. If those coincide, that's great.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, if I was a dancer, you know, that's not going to make me the money. Did you have that visual?
Yes, I did. Oh,
please. He scared me a little too long. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, that's not going to get me the wealth that I need. Or maybe, but it probably won't. But you know,
I saw those pictures of your pool party. That's how it came back.
The mermaid party. I don't necessarily think that you should quit your job just because you are unhappy. I would say either if you're that unhappy and it's affecting your family and affecting your life, then you got to be an adult. Else. You got to.
I was coming more from a security standpoint or stability standpoint. So, would you say that your commercial pilot helped you weather probably storms early on? That you
absolutely.
You ever say so? Maybe holding on to something for a while until you build something to replace it.
Yeah, without it. And that to me is this part of a strategy, right? So like I've got people that I coach right now. I've got a guy that I coach. He's a Las Vegas SWAT officer. And he's like, man, I he's doing a lot of real estate and I'm coaching him. And he's like, I want to step down from his role as a SWAT officer. And we're talking about it. And his wife calls me and she's like, you know, can you talk to him a little bit and kind of see what he's doing? If he wants to do that, he's miserable, that's fine. But I don't know that, I think it's more of a knee-jerk reaction of what he's doing. Mm-hmm. So he and I talk and super, super great guy. And we're communicating about this. And I said, listen, this is a chapter in your life. This is a vehicle to get you to where you are going. You're thinking that this is going to be you for the rest of your life, that you're basically, you know, up doing a bunch of hours on SWAT and you're doing real estate and I'm like, that's just part of the story. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, I'll give you an example. Like a lot of people ask me, they said, Steve, you know, you sold your business and then you started doing other stuff. Like, why did you sell your business? Your business was good. There was no reason to sell it. And so this is what I was telling him. And same thing I'll tell you here is life is like a book, right? It's full of chapters. Mm-hmm. Some chapters are long, some chapters are short. Right? Some are good, some are bad. And so just because the chapter ends, the chapter's over. Mm-hmm. Like, that's it. So I said, look, you have a chapter. There's a reason you have this job. It's giving you the finance to buy the houses, to give you the freedom that you want. So use it as part of it. That chapter is going to end and you're not going to go back to that chapter. And so I said, just use it as that. And remember, this is a small window in your life to get you what you want. And I said, so if it means you got to do it for a year, 2 years, I said, the challenge most of us have is we don't know when that chapter is going to end and we don't plan it. So it just kind of goes on and on and on, as opposed to saying, okay, in 3 years, I'm going to be financially independent. This is the goal. So now you know, I've got a 3-year chapter here, and this is what I got to do to make it happen.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, now that we're talking about chapters, so you built the successful property management company, sold that. Now, what are you doing now?
Now I'm doing, well, I'm doing a lot of stuff on, you know, speaking on, now it's all social media and bigger pockets and other stuff, because there's no stages, obviously. But what I'm doing now is, it's kind of weird. It almost reminds me, not that I'm trying to age myself, but it's almost like you get to a point in life that you kind of flip and you do something different, right? And so for me, I almost feel like if I can give my knowledge to people of what I've learned and, you know, been coached and mentored, just like you guys, right? Yeah. You know, I put a lot of stock in self-development and trying to be better. I don't think just because we graduate high school or college or whatever it is that we stop. You know, I think you're either growing or dying. You're either getting smarter or dumber. I mean, that's just fat or skinnier. I mean, that's just how it is, right? There's no equilibrium. And so what I'm doing now is I'm doing a lot of education. And what I mean by that is, what fascinates me, and for whatever reason, I just have a very good skill set of doing this, of when I am talking to someone about real estate, I want to know why more. And I start asking a lot of why questions. And what I realize is, you know, when I was learning to buy real estate, everybody teaches you the how. They teach you how to flip, how to rehab. But nobody actually says, why are you buying that as a flip? Why are you buying that to rehab? What is the reason? And a lot of times we equate that to maybe, well, I want to make more money. Well, why do you want more money?
Right.
What is the reason you want from it? So I ask a lot of why questions. So a lot of the mentoring and coaching and stuff that I do is I kind of get into your head and kind of ask you why. You know, why do you want to own real estate? What is the life you want to have as a result of owning this property? If it's just more money, you can get a job and do that. You don't need, real estate's not going to do that for you. And more important, like, how do you, you know, let's say you go to a seminar for the weekend and you come home and I'm buying real estate. How do you explain that to your spouse and get them on board and get them to understand why you're doing this? Because the one thing I've learned, now you guys are very lucky because, you know, you're a husband, wife doing this. So you guys are both in line with each other. But, you know, most people out there, and I say this very respectfully to most, you know, entrepreneurs and investors out there, is we can be very selfish as investors and entrepreneurs. And the reason I say that is, we learn all this information. We read books. We go, we live these podcasts. We do all these things, and we never share it with the people that we're actually doing it for. You're doing it for your family. You're doing it, you know, you want to create generational wealth for your kids. We do all of the stuff, but we never actually share it with them. And we don't actually tell them why we're doing it. So then they just say, oh, he went to a seminar again this weekend. Now I'm doing some rapping or subject to-ing or something. I don't even. And so I think that we can be very selfish that way, that we don't share that out. And, you know, I try to explain to them, like, look, you're the people that you're doing it for don't even know why you're doing it or what you're doing. In any other realm of business or life, you would say that's crazy. But for some reason, it's more accepted in the real estate world. And I don't know why. You know,
do you find a struggle? I think that's awesome. And I think people need that. I think what I've personally seen is people figure that out or start questioning or asking those questions after a period of time. So like, the, you know, I mean, they don't start. And usually not until they start making a little bit of money, then they start questioning the why. But I mean, it was that way for ourselves. I think, you know, but when if you approach it that way, do you get, because I think a lot of especially young entrepreneurs or the young people wanting to get into the real estate space, they don't want to hear those questions, or they just want, like, show me how to make money, you know, and they're like, to focus on that. And so why are we gonna talk about why? I just show me the money first. And then
I think that there's a lot of people out there that, you know, they, again, on the surface, the first layer of an onion, we'll say, is the money. But the money is buying them something. There's a reason they want the money. And normally, I have learned or been trained that it's normally about five levels deep. Mm-hmm. They want money to have a life. Well, mm-hmm. why do you want to have a life? Because I want to have the security. Well, why do you want to have the security? And you go down deeper into it, and you realize that it's something from their, you know, they either want a status level or they want the safety and security of what the money gives them. Because mm-hmm. I tell people, you know, people that I coach, I say, well, what do you want out of the real estate? Well, I want to make $50,000 a month. I'm like, okay, so if you were working 23 and a half hours a day but making $50,000 a month, would you be happy? Well, no. Well, then it's not the money. It's right. what you think the money's going to give mm-hmm. you. You think that you're going to hit a certain number in your bank account, and that's going to give you whatever it is that you're searching. So mm-hmm. let's go deeper and let's, why not just bypass it? Why not just figure out what you're searching for and go after that?
Yeah. Cool.
And so a lot of times people really have a hard time understanding that, you know, real estate, just like stock, intellectual property, it's just a tool. Yeah. It's just a vehicle. Yeah. That's all it is. It's, you know, the challenge investors have, we have, and I don't know about people that do a lot of flipping because it's not the same, but I don't necessarily think of flipping as a business. Mm-hmm. I think that's more of a job, wholesaling, those kind of things. But when it comes to the investing side, because we live in a house, we equate that to owning a rental property.
Absolutely.
But if it was
ask every owner that we manage for us. Yeah, exactly. They think they know everything.
Yeah. I'm going to Home Depot. Tap on the wall. That'll get the light on. You know, I did it all the time. I birthed my kid on that floor. You can't paint it. You know?
You can go get an AC unit at Home Depot for $50.
Go to Amazon. I'm looking online right now in Anchorage, and I see it a lot cheaper. Yeah, exactly.
But I think if going back to what you're saying, if they know the why, there's a couple of things. Number one is they're going to face some obstacles and challenges. And if they truly know their why, they're going to stick with it. Because the minute a lot of people quit. Right.
Absolutely.
Because they quit right away when they don't make $20,000 on a house for the first one.
Sucks.
This isn't right. Yeah. The guy on the stage
I bought the course. This is not the way.
Yeah. But I also think they can get there quicker. To whatever their true why or need is, you know, because we were the same way. Mm-hmm. I mean, for years it was like, we did 50 houses. Oh, I got to do 60 next year,
and I got to do 100.
But I have no reason why I'm doing that many.
I know, houses. Yeah, exactly. And like when I mentor people or coach them, one of the first things, you know, I ask them what is it, and they don't know. And I'm like, well, that's like you getting on the freeway and you're asking me directions. And the first thing I'm going to ask you is, where are you going? Yeah. And if you're like, I don't know, then I'm going to say, well, then I can't help you. Yeah. Right. And so that's the challenge we have. Right. So the way I explain it again, I'll use it simple terms is for me, it's easy. If you said your life at the end is going to be Disneyland, Disneyland is your life. So that's where you're going. That's the destination. You start with that at the end and work it backwards. The strategy to get to Disneyland is the freeway. So you're going to get to LAX, you're going to take the 405 to the 105 to the 91, exit Disneyland Drive. That's the strategy. The strategy is buy and hold, flipping, mm-hmm. wholesaling. Mm-hmm. These are the different freeways that are going to get you to Disneyland. So you may get on one freeway and go like, oh, there's a lot of traffic here. This isn't getting me there. I'm going to get off on a couple streets. So you may say, okay, I'm going to flip three properties, do one buy and hold, flip three properties, buy and hold. Now I'm going to flip two buy and hold, whatever that mm-hmm. freeway yeah. you're going to take there. The tactic is the actual property. That's the last piece of the puzzle. That's like if you got to LAX and you jumped on a snowmobile on the 405 freeway, you're not getting to Disneyland. You're not getting, no matter how hard you try, no matter anything, you're not getting there. And so I tell people, it sounds pretty ridiculous, doesn't it? And they're like, yeah. And I go, that's what people do in real estate. They buy the deal and they go, what do I do with this now? Should I Airbnb it? I'm like, the property is the last piece of the puzzle. First you got to know where you're going. Then you map it out. Then you figure out what kind of car am I going to drive? Is it a motorcycle? Is it an RV? What is it? Is it an apartment? Is it a, you know?
Right.
And so as investors, I think the challenge we all have is we do it backwards. We think we want the money. The money is, that's easy part, you know? Mm-hmm. It's where you're going with this, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we all know the hardest worker in the room is not going to be the most successful. If that was the case, construction people and laborers would be the richest people on the planet, right. But they're not.
Yeah.
So there's a reason for that, right? And so it's because the ones who can map this out and plan the strategy, I think, are the ones who are successful.
Mm-hmm. That's great. What advice would you get if people just wanted to get involved? Like, just because you work probably with a lot of new clients, new people wanting to get into real estate. What advice would you have for somebody? So if we have a lot of listeners that are just like beginners, new.
You know, the best advice I would give is figure out your why. Mm-hmm. Figure out, like you said, the you know, the days and nights of bad tenants and drama of tenants, toilets, turmoil, all the drama, that has to be backed up by your why. So you really got to sit down and you got to bring your family. You know, again, what does your wife want? What do your kids want? How does everybody feel about this? Mm-hmm. Make sure everybody is in this. You know, you don't want to jump in the car. You're going to Disneyland. Wife's going to Knott's Berry Farm. Kids going to Magic Mountain. Everyone's going to, and they're going, where are we going? So going back to your question, you've got to figure out what you want as a result of real estate. People think that, people confuse the strategy with the goal. When I talk to new people, they say, I want to have 10 rentals. I'm like, that's like saying I want to get on 45. For what? Where are you going with this? They're like, oh, I never thought about that. I'm like, those 10 rentals are going to give you something. What is it? Mm-hmm. You know, because you can get 10 rentals tomorrow. They could all lose money. They could, you know, I could sell you some down in South Park very easily, you know. So I think the biggest, you know, I think you have to sharpen your mental axe and you have to slow down to speed up. And I think you have to really think it through before you buy the first property. And I think a lot of us, we think by being busy and doing will make us successful just to get a deal. I just want to get a deal. Well, it's 3 to 4 times more energy, heartache, stress, as we all know, when you buy the wrong deal to fix that situation.
Right.
So that I would say you got to slow down, figure out what you want before you get started.
That's awesome. What about, what habits have you helped you succeed in other business or life that you maybe still do today or you've done?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I think everyone, let's see, let me think this through here. I'm very consistent in what I do. You know, whether it's going to the gym every day, I like consistency in what I do. And I like to make sure that I'm planning things out. So I'm very big, you know, old school. I take paper, I write down my list for the day. Now I'll put it in my Google Calendar and stuff. But I try my best to live a proactive life. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is many people that you talk to at the end of the day, they're like, I don't know where my day went. I've been on phone calls all day. I've been this, I've been that. I don't even know. I didn't get anything done. Mm-hmm. That's a reactive life. So right. I really try to plan my day, plan my life proactively. And if it doesn't fit in that day, then it doesn't fit. You know, a lot of times we take other people's problems and we turn them into our problems. Mm-hmm. And now we have to deal with it because now we own their problem and they pushed it off because for whatever reason. So the habits I have, I try to be very diligent with setting up the beginning part of my day. That seems to really set me. And, you know, it's still a work in progress, but you know, I try to do the same things. Now for me, being an airline pilot, I'm in different parts of the world. That's not always easy, but I'm very, very consistent with what I do. But the one thing I will say is I live and die by my calendar and I try not to let anything deviate from there. And you know, if people don't respect my time, like if I have a meeting and they're late, I'm not in the meeting. Yeah. I tell them, you got to call and reschedule. Mm-hmm. Like, if you can't respect my time, don't expect me to respect yours. So yeah. I'm a big person of being on time, being respectful, but expecting the same in return.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking about that yesterday.
Oh, yeah. We talk about it all the time, consistency.
Yeah, she was talking about how you plan your day. You're very proactive. But we were on another podcast, and she was talking about sometimes it seems boring because our lives is like, you know, we do the same thing. We're very structured. But, like, hey, we get it all in, and people wonder, like, how did you get there? I just did this every single, I didn't let things dictate me.
Right.
I dictated.
Well, you know, and here's the thing, you know, it's, I don't know if you guys ever read that book, The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy, you know, and it's just small degrees. It's like when I fly an airplane, we're not making huge course corrections. We're making 1 to 2 degree differences, but over the course of thousands of miles, that's a big difference. Yeah. So it's just small things. And, you know, when I speak and talk to people, I tell them, you know, everyone in this room, right? Maybe 100,000 people, whatever. Everyone's in the top 10%, right? We're all in the upper, we're at the top 10% of all the people. But yet we know we really need to be in the top 3% to be successful. Yeah. We don't have the life we want to have in the top 10. That 7% difference, it's not a big change, but you've got to make some changes because let's face it, if you had that, you wouldn't be in the listening to us, right? You'd have the life you want. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's like people that want to get in shape or, you know, get healthy. It's not these huge changes. It's just very small corrections. Mm-hmm. That's the key. So I tell people, like, if you want to change your life, just do one thing at a time and be very diligent and focused on that.
So true.
So on that note, you always had a very good physique. Yes. No hair, but good physique. So, that's got to have been hard building a business, flying all the time. Yeah. So like, when I ever struggle with either eating right or working out, it's when I'm traveling. Yes. How do you do it?
Yes. Well, first of all, thank you for noticing my body. Appreciate that.
Yeah, you made me think about it earlier.
Yeah, sorry. I planted that seed. Yeah. I was waiting for it to come back. yeah, you know, it's funny. I may be a little bit more extreme than the average, right? But to me, it is being in shape. You know, we do all this stuff for our finances, right? And I think your life sits on a three-legged stool. You have health, you have wealth, and you have relationship, mm-hmm. right? If one of those is not standing, the stool is not going to stand.
Right.
So for me, being healthy, to me, the way I identify that is going to the gym and working out. Mm-hmm. It is not even a question. It is a non-negotiable. If I have to get up at 2 in the morning because I've got a 4 o'clock flight, I'm up at 2. Mm-hmm. I don't care. When I land, wherever I go, I'd be on the plane 10, 12 hours. When I land, I go right to the gym again.
And even when there's no gym.
Even when there's no gym, I'll do something. I run the steps in the hotel. Like, yeah. It's weird. It's just, I'm just driven to, I know that if I have it in me, I'm almost quitting on myself not to do it. Now, that may be a little bit extreme, but I think that we owe it to ourselves to do something to be better. Like, we try to be better mentally. We try to be better financially. Mm-hmm. But a lot of us don't try to be better physically, like mm-hmm. to be healthier, just mm-hmm. Even if you don't work out, just try to eat healthy, mm-hmm. just try to be a better person to yourself. And a lot of times we don't do that. And I think it's a big mistake.
Sweet. Do you have any books or podcasts, or what do you recommend people listening to?
Oh boy. You know, it probably depends on where they're going in their life. I think there's a lot of staple books out there that I like and that I circle back to. The E-Myth is a very good one that I like. I'm a big Grant Cardone 10X fan. I think you've got to really exercise your brain with different varieties of what's important. Atomic Habits is a really good one. There's a lot of good, you know, let me rephrase that. There's sometimes too much information out there. There's too many courses, not too many courses as far as what I'm doing. Just to be clear.
They just got to remember one. Yeah. Steve Rosenberg.
Just one, Steve Rosenberg. That's the only course. But, you know, sometimes it's information overload, you know? And so I follow certain people, you know, religiously all the time. I like how they think. And some of them are not business. Some are business. But I think you just got to pick with what you're doing. Like, you know, with what I'm doing in my stage of my life, I'm listening to a lot of Russell Brunson stuff, a lot of Tony Robbins stuff, because that's mm-hmm. where I'm at in my life. 5-10 years ago, probably wouldn't have been relatable to me. Yeah. So I use it, you know, all these podcast shows and audiobook stuff. It's like you're getting a free college education mm-hmm. from billionaires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a lot of times we don't, you know, I mean, I listen to them all the time, whether it's YouTube or an audiobook. I mean, I'm constantly, I don't listen to music or anything. Yeah. I just listen to those all the time. That's
awesome. So how do our listeners get a hold of you? I know you have the Think Tank Mastermind, which is the great mastermind. Yeah,
tell us what you're doing. Tell us can they find out more about you. How can they sign up for your course?
So I have a weekly mastermind where I bring on, you know, a bunch of top level people on there. And basically it's a Q&A, right? We can pick each other's brains. Mm-hmm. We can talk. A lot of Bigger Pockets people, friends of mine, will come on. I've had other people, you know, Brad Lee and some of these other very, very big name people come on as a guest. And I think it's important to be able to not just real estate, but be able to talk all levels mm-hmm. of stuff, of success. And I want to talk to people that are way above my level because I want to get there. Mm-hmm. So I do a weekly mastermind. If you go to my website, steverosenberg.com, there you'll find all the different stuff that I have. I also am launching a video course. It's a fully interactive, on-demand, virtual video course, education mm-hmm. course. And it shows investors how to go from 0 to 1. And so, well, it actually shows you how to get to plus 20 properties. But the first thing I've learned is everybody sees, you know, they see Sean and Joni, they see me, they see all these people out there, and they're like, that's great. These guys are crossing the finish line. They're amazing. But how do I cross the starting line? Like, yeah. I just want to get one deal. Like, how do I just get one freaking rental property mm-hmm. to get me going? Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of times we kind of assume a lot of things that people know mm-hmm. because we've been doing it so mm-hmm. long. And so my courses basically show people more on the mental side of, okay, what is the negative self-talk that I'm thinking of just to get to one property? Right. What are all the things that challenges that I'm going to come across? So I show people how to go from 0 to 1. Then I go from 1 to 5. Mm-hmm. Then we go from 5 to 10, 10 to 20, 20 on. Then we start explaining syndications, hard money lending, subject to. So we're trying to encompass everything, but a lot of it is kind of introspective of the sense that, how are you as a leader? Because, you know, as you grow your rental portfolio, you have to get out of the operator mode and get into the leader mode. You got to start hiring people. You got to start having people on your team. You got, and so I'm going on that side. I'm not showing you how to buy per square foot because I think there's many people out there better than me that can do that. I'm kind of saying, should you even be in real estate? And if you should, how do you think correctly so that when you lay your head down at the pillow at night, you're kind of going, okay, I'm doing the right thing for me, for my family, for my future, and I'm not just out there guessing? Because I think one of the biggest challenges that I found in real estate is there's really no one out there, once you own the property, to tell you if you should continue owning it, not. You know, you guys have the property management company. That's great. Mm-hmm. It's a great asset. But there's no one really to tell them, hey, this, you should buy more of these. Mm-hmm. This aligns with your goals for what your family want. And so that's what these courses do. They basically really make you think about how you can make sure that it's aligning with your strategy to achieve your goal, whatever that goal is for you.
Sweet. So steverosenberg.com, right?
Yeah. And then, steverosenberg.com.
It's with a Z.
With a Z, yes. R-O-Z-E-N-B-E-R-G. Yeah. Also, if people want to follow me on Instagram, it's Rosenberg Steve. So my last name first, Rosenberg Steve, or Facebook, Steve Rosenberg. But yeah, they, if you Google me, you'll I'm out there.
Yeah.
I'm out there.
Well, thank you, Steve, for joining us today. Please check out steverosenberg.com and his Think Tank Mastermind and the Millionaire Mindset Academy courses that he's got.
So yeah, we appreciate you being here.
It was a lot of fun.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there talking.
Talking.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolf'sDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.